Rehearsed interview with Mr. Clyde Irwin and Mr. Paul Graham, both of Benham, Kentucky, by Debbie Wilson for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at the Rebecca Cottle Library in Cumberland, Kentucky on June the 21st at 2:30 p.m. Now, I understand that both of you gentlemen work with International Harvester, or have worked with them. Is that correct?
Yes.
You're both retired now.
Right. Yes.
Okay, well, I want to start with you, Mr. Irwin, and just get a little of your personal background. Now, how long have you been in Harlan County?
Since 1919.
Now, where were you born? Where did you come from?
New Tazewell, Tennessee, and came to Benham in May of 1919. I followed my brother, who had been in World War I, and he came to Harlan County looking for work, and I followed him to Benham and stayed for 2 weeks and went back to Tennessee, then came back the following Christmas and worked for International Harvest Company during Christmas vacation. And from then on I worked a year or two during vacations and going back to school to LMU. And until 1921, and in 21 I went again worked for the company and stayed until 1969.
That's so my what was your position with the company?
My early position was laborer, and I went through the various jobs connected with mining and outside work. And in 1960 I was promoted to general superintendent. Position I held until I retired in October 1969.
Do you have a family?
Yes.
Who's your wife?
My wife is a farmer, Bess Quarles, from East Stone Gap, Virginia.
How many children do you have?
Two sons.
Are they still here in Harlan County, or have they
left? No. My oldest son is connected to the University of Kentucky as an instructor. He received his bachelor from University of Kentucky in 50, went out and worked until 56 and went back to University of Kentucky and worked for his master's. Then from that, in 1964, he received his doctorate from the University of Illinois and is now back at the University of Kentucky as instructor. My younger son, Glenn, is employed by I was employed by International Harvester Company in accounting until about 2 years ago when the International Harvester Company sold the division that he is with to a new company for the area named Envirodyne, and he is now employed with them as an accountant.
Okay, now Mr. Graham, I'm going to ask you these same background questions. Now, where did you come from to Harlan?
I came from Jonesville, Virginia, Lee County, Virginia. And I came over here in 1936. And it was a couple of years before I got a job at Benham. And I guess it was 1939 when I got employed at Benham. And I remained with the company until I retired in 1968, and I too went up the ladder from clerk. I started clerking in the commissary, the company commissary, and then I became a mine clerk, and then I held various positions. So when I retired, I was general foreman of the coal preparation plant, or it's commonly called the tipple, in connection with the coal mine. I have two children. I married a Benham girl, Carmen Aldridge, and we had two children, a daughter who teaches school in Erlanger, Kentucky, and a son who works for Ford Motor Company in Indianapolis, Indiana.
So now you are both retired employees of International Harvester. Now, to show you how much I know about International Harvester, I thought all they did was make tractors. So now, tell me, what did International Harvester come to Harlan County, Kentucky for? I'm at a loss.
Well, they had their steel mill, of course, in Chicago, South Chicago, where they made steel to put into their various equipment they built. In connection with this, they need a good source of coke to use in their steel mill. The best coke they could find was in eastern Kentucky, here in this area in Benham. They had a survey made of the property here prior to 1910. The survey was made by a Frenchman, Frenchman geologist named D.N. Valier. And I say he made the survey of 55,000 acres, the International Harvester Company acquired part of the property, and they, in turn, let U.S. Steel have some of the property for their ranch operation, and they finally wound up with 6,000 acres. That is about the size of the property now, from which they obtained this high-grade metallurgical coal, and they made their coke in Benham. That required coke ovens, of course, what they call beehive coke ovens. They built 208 of these coke ovens. Of course, it required good labor and masonry. These were built of huge stone, and they kept making the beehive coke until 1924. It's 28, Paul, I believe. When they quit making the coke at Benham and shipped the raw coal to South Chicago, where they had built some byproduct plants. Byproduct plants use everything, you know, from the coal. The coke ovens they had let the smoke and everything go up into the elements, but the new plant in Chicago used all this smoke, burned it, and got all the byproducts. That's the main reason for them coming to Benham, is to get the coal. Now, in preparing for this coal, of course, this was, and Ms. Day has told us, was a wild country at that time. Labor was scarce, and never even transportation. So they had to extend the railroad into Benham, which was completed in 1911. Incidentally, the first car of coal was shipped from Benham in September 1911. That was shipped out to South Chicago. As I say, labor was scarce, so Benham had to, the International Harvester Company, had to come in and build a town, which we would call a closed-circuit town. By that, they had to have everything. Houses, 530 houses, eventually. And they had to build churches, the schools, the water supply, the electric plant, the hospital, and everything that takes, well, stores, markets, everything it takes to make a town, even the churches. The Protestant church, the Catholic church, all those things. Can't name any other now, Paul.
Can you think of something else that they had to build? What you're saying is they literally built a town scratch?
Yeah, they provided recreation, had a clubhouse and a theater, and with a bowling alley and pool rooms, barber shops, beauty shop, everything.
And all this was company supplied?
Every bit of it.
So even a beauty shop operator would have been a company employee, is that?
I'm not so sure that how that worked. Do you know, Clyde?
Were there some independent operators?
I think the barbers and the beauty operator were independent. But
I think they just provided them, a room to work in, somebody there just...
But they worked on company ground.
Right,
they were just,
right, yeah.
They furnished housing for them.
They furnished housing for them, for their work and for their dwelling, too.
Could you come into the town? Well, I don't guess you would have wanted to come in, though, if you hadn't have been a company employee, but would they have let other people in?
No, not at that time.
No, it was such a chore for them to prepare for the employees, they couldn't prepare space for other people except ministers, of course.
Did the company pick the churches that would come in?
Oh, no. No. They built the church. The churches, as I say, they had one Catholic church and one Protestant church. They did supplement the church in furnishing power and so forth for the church. They supplemented the school by a certain monies that they donated each year within the budget to the school system in order to have higher grade education for their employees' children in Benham. That's about the first high school in the valley was in Benham, and it was 2 years, which grew into 4 years in the early 20s.
Well, who picked the name Benham? How did that get settled on? Was that the president of the company's name or something?
Not necessarily. The first town, it was first known as Yowell, Yowell. This was later changed to Benham. I'm not sure when or why. We've heard different tales about that. One was there's some Benham apple trees on top of the mountain, and good apples, and they named the apple trees. Another was there was a hunter named Benham came through the area and was killed by a bear, and they named it Benham. You might have heard of other. You or Mr. Creech, either one might have heard of other.
Have you heard of any such tales?
No, I just heard the same story. I don't really know.
No different ones.
I don't know how Benham got its name, really.
Well, now, about how many people lived in this town early?
Well, like he said, there were about 530 families, and they probably averaged five or six to the family.
So these miners were allowed to bring their families right in with them when they come?
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't keep them there without it.
You know, today we talk about the federal government just being involved a lot, you know, in our lives. But it seems to me that the company had more control over your town than even the federal government does today, practically.
They had absolute control over practically every phase of our lives.
Well, now, how did this affect people to be so dominated?
Well, the company... were exceptionally good to us. We just thought we were fortunate because they provided so much for us. For a long time, I lived in a nice five-room house with hardwood floors and everything, with a little utility building on the back of my lot with a beautiful yard for $13 a month. And that included everything. They took care of all the electrical problems, the plumbing problems, the painting of the house. And when the company finally decided to sell us the houses, I didn't want to buy mine. I would have preferred to keep on renting at $13 a month. But it got so expensive, you know. They had to keep a whole gang of carpenters and electricians around just to take care of the town. And I've heard that it was costing them up toward $100,000 a year just to maintain the town. So they finally decided that as times were changing and everything, and people could drive into work and all without, you know, having to live there, that they had to get out of the real estate business. So they decided to just sell us our houses and turn the town over to us. And they gave us everything. They gave us the hospital, the churches, the fire department, the water plant. They charged $1 for each. I mean, it's an article in the paper. Company sells the whole town for $9, you know, just to make it a legal contract. They charge $1 for each item, you know. And then we became an incorporated town and elected as a city government and operate just like any other little town now.
Was it a unique situation that you had in Benham? Were other companies as good to their people as the International Harvester was to
many
Benham?
Of them were, yeah, they were.
Neighboring town, U.S. Steel, the ranch was the same. They had the same layout set up.
So, Bench and Linham. I was really turned around.
Benham.
I can't hear. Now, I'm tongue-tied. Okay, Lynch and Benham. Okay. They are both company towns, and they're both on the same setup, is that?
They were, yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, up until the early 60s when they sold out. And they were almost identical in the way they operated the two towns. The people in each, you know, benefited from the supplements and so forth that the company provided.
Were there any differences that either of you can think of in the layout of the two towns?
Not really.
No. One, I don't know if we should mention it, the miners in one belong to the UMW. The miners in the other belong to a PMW.
They had different unions.
Yeah. That's about enough to say about that.
We don't talk about unions. Okay.
One thing, well, you may ask about schools later, so.
No, go ahead.
I wanted to say that as time grew on, and the roads came and opened up, you know, and people moved out where they could drive in from outlying regions into Benham, then they began thinking about better schooling, too, for their employees' children. To make a long story short, the International Harvester Company then contributed 123 acres of property for the building of a community college here in Cumberland, which has been a great asset to the area. Mr. Newman, he was my predecessor, said, we want a school that our children can slide right out of high school into college.
So now they've got that, huh? Well, now, the people, where did they go to find the people that they brought into Benham? I mean, did they bring them out of big cities in the east, or?
Some came out of big cities in the east. Some came by transportation. That's the word they had then. They'd send someone to, say, Alabama to hire a bunch of men, miners, you know, and they'd load them up into a train and bring them, like Mr. Christmas talked, bring them to Benham or to the area and furnish jobs for them. A lot of that was done, and a lot of it was
local people,
and from across the mountain, you know, I say across the mountain into Virginia, Lee County, Virginia, just come across the mountain, go to work in Benham. After one or two came over there, they found it's a good place to work, so the word got around, and here they kept coming in, so they had no problem getting.
How close are you to Virginia?
About 10 miles.
Well, now, what was the origin of the local people? Do you know that, the nationality? Primarily
Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah, Anglo-Saxon. Yeah. Later on, Hungarians and Italians and foreigners of different nationalities drifted in, you know, as the place became better known. But originally, just these old mountain people here.
The Anglo-Saxons with their Chaucerian.
Right. Yeah.
Well, tell me about Benham today. I mean, you said that the company ownership of everything went out in the early 60s.
Right.
Well, now, what's become of the town since then?
Well, the residents have improved their homes tremendously, you know, now that they own them. Incidentally, I might quote you some prices on the homes. This house that I had paid $13 a month for, I bought it for $1,100. And I did a few thousand dollars worth of improvement on it, and it would be worth, $25,000 now. And we've managed to keep improvements, keep the streets up, and the town provides the services just about like any other small town would. We've got police protection and a fire department, voluntary fire department, and we just recently installed a new water system, new sewer system. This is bonded, you know, borrowed money with bonding issues, and we're just going around like any normal little town would.
Now, you mentioned this $1,100. You bought this in the early 1960s. It cost $1,100.
Right.
Now, do you have any other industry in Benham other than the coal mining industry?
No.
That's the only way for people to make a living?
That's it.
What about businesses? You know, grocery stores, clothing stores?
We have one building supply store, I guess, and there's some beauty shops around and two or three homes where they build a room onto their home and got a beauty shop going. Outside of that, I don't guess we don't have any stores.
No.
So you do as the people in Lynch, you come into Cumberland, is that?
Yeah, that's where we shop.
Well, now, you were mentioning education earlier. Now, you have your own school in Benham presently, high school and grade school, or just grade schools?
Just the elementary school now. We had to consolidate with Cumberland. The population declined, and as was indicated before, a lot of our people are retired people now, their children are gone, and the school population declined before we had to consolidate with Cumberland. And they're bused down here from Benham, you see. But we do have a fine elementary school, and we bust some kids up from down this area just to kind of balance the thing out, you see. And just in the county system, Lynch still has an independent system. But a few years ago, Benham decided to let theirs go into the county system.
You spoke of your retired population. Now, is that not a problem for Benham?
It is. A lot of the employees have to live outside Benham and commute, you know.
But you do have people that are coming in from the outside to work in Benham.
Oh, yes.
This is something I'm not just clear on, because I'm not familiar with mining. Now, where is the mine from Benham? I mean, are you saying...
It's right in the middle of town, almost. The town right around it.
Well, now...
Of course, the mine's up on the side of the hill.
When I think of mines, okay, I think they're going inside.
Yeah, they
okay.
are.
Okay. But this is in the town? I mean, okay, say the entry to the mine. Where is that from the city or the town?
Well, it's not over 300 or 400 yards from some of the dwellings. It's just like digging a tunnel in the side of a mountain. That's the way you go into mine. You just dig a tunnel and go in, and that's the way it is.
I see.
These are seams of coal. Imagine a big layer cake. These seams of coal lay pretty well level.
Sort of like the icing wood between layers.
That's the different layers. That's correct.
And you just go into the side of the mountain, and that's...
You start out by digging a tunnel. That's the way you start. And then you branch out in different directions from the main tunnel that you enter.
One point about that mining. In the early days, when they first opened the mine, they didn't have this sophisticated equipment, mining equipment they have now. So most of the mining was done by hand, known as by hand loading. The different miners would go and have his own set of tools, and he'd go into his working place, and he'd drill his holes in the coal and put the explosive in and blast the coal down and shove it into mine cars by hand, which were gathered by locomotives. They'd have locomotives and track, just like railroad track, going into each working place, and they'd pull this coal in out to the tipple and take the car back in or leave them another car. And that was what was known as hand mining or hand loading. And a good miner in those days, the average was, you'd load 10 tons of coal a day, a shift. Now they have this sophisticated equipment, and they'll have one loading machine that will probably load 15 tons of coal an hour. As against 10 tons a day. But it doesn't require near as many miners as it did back in the early days. That's one of the big changes that have been made in mining since we first went to Benham.
Well, how did they pay their miners? Did they pay them by the ton or by the day?
By the ton, at that time.
Paid them by the ton.
This miner, before he, for instance, this were we call this, they call them ream entries. Going down here and off of this every 50 feet or 72 feet, say, they'd turn what they call rooms.
Yeah.
They'd drive these out 200 feet deep. Now each cut would be 6 feet, and they'd come here with a machine, undercut that coal to the depth of 6 feet and probably 10 feet wide, and then this miner would load back into the coal car, and they would be pulled back into the tipple. And this miner, before he loaded that car, he had a brass check about as big as half a dollar. He would put on a hook down inside the car. And the man out the tip of where they dumped the coal would have his name on a list out there with this number. See, he'd have his own individual number. The car would be dumped. They'd pull a check off and give it to the man there, and he'd get pay for that car. But one time it was car, and then finally it was by weight. They had a scale there that weighed this coal. So he gets paid so much per ton for his coal. Of course, that was done away with in, I guess the late 40s when they went to mechanical mining, they call.
How do they pay miners now? Just
pay
by the
day,
hour?
By the day. Yeah. Incidentally, a miner back in the early days of loading 10 tons of coal, he was paid 83 cents a ton for loading that coal, so there'd be $8.30. Now this miner goes in and stays 8 hours or whatever, and he gets $60 or $75
a day.
Work. So
I may take my money.
They hire you.
Well, do you have any women in the mines?
We do have.
Sure.
Oh, you do?
A few.
Would you say? I mean, I think of mining as just back-breaking, terrible labor, and I'm sure it was in the early years. What, I mean, was it that way? That's just the impression I get. It just
using a pick and shovel, and usually the height was such that you had to stay stooped, maybe 4 feet or something like that, you know. And it was hard work, but they got used to it. They liked it. The temperature's the same the year round under there, and they preferred that to outside work.
Does it get in your blood, so to speak?
Another thing you're talking about, this being a town of retired people, in the early days, a lot of sons followed their fathers in the mining industry. They just finished high school and went right into the mine because the pay was average, you know. And a lot of them would leave at home. Of course, all of them go ahead and get married and establish their own home.
We had a few of the fourth generation working.
Yeah.
A lot of the third generation, a few of the fourth.
Now, what about mining today? Is it that hard, I mean, it's that strenuous labor? Like
no, it's just operating machines, hydraulic machines, mostly now. And it's required more skill, better engineering, planning ahead for the work and everything. It's a different ball game altogether to what it used to be, you know.
It'd be compared somewhat to moving dirt.
Yeah, what you back see on the outside.
Yeah, right? See a man with a shovel and a wheelbarrow, you know, by the old handwork, he'd have shovel, dirt, and wheelbarrow. Now you have a big high lift to load a truck.
Can you all think of anything else that you'd like to tell about the change in mining? I mean, I'm not familiar enough with mining to know what to ask you, so just if you can think of anything that, you know, that you want to tell about how it's changed over the years.
Well, one thing, initially, the transportation from the mine was by track, and first by a mule. They had mine mules. They'd take a mule in there and pull this car coal out here and weigh it. And later on, they had electric locomotives. Then they put the trolley wire up, like the old street cars, you know, you see them down. They'd run on a trolley wire and pull the cars out. And the present method is they have conveyor belts going down through the mine, and they dump the coal on the conveyor belt way back there at the workings, and that's hauled out by conveyor belt. That's one of the biggest.
That's one of the biggest changes. And then they have the processing plants at the...
Just excuse me a minute, yeah. I want to turn the tape over. ...of an interview with Mr. Clyde Irwin and Mr. Paul Graham. Now, Mr. Graham, you were starting to say something about changes.
Yes, the time was when coal just brought to the outside and dumped in railroad cars and hauled off to whatever market. And now we have our laboratories and our preparation plants where we blend it and separate it and control the amount of sulfur and by blending, you know, you can control the amount of impurities and stuff that go out in the coal. And it's a much more technical operation now, much more skill involved in not only the preparation but in the mining process, operating complicated machines and stuff. And then the safety requirements are much more severe now because of this heavy equipment. Used to when you just picked and shoveled, each man could look out for himself, but with all this big equipment in there, you have to have a very good safety program, which they all do have. They're required to have now, you know. It's like I said, it's a different process to what it used to be back when it was simpler, back when they first opened up these two places up here.
Are there any other changes that either of you'd like to mention?
I thought I'd say something about what's required now. Of course, in the engineering part of it, you can imagine that there's a greater demand for engineers now, and many of them are college trained, of course, and when it comes to operating machinery and stuff like that, well, of course, it's just a matter of learning skills at vocational schools or wherever, just wherever you can learn, on the job, any way you can learn it, just so you can learn your skill. But a lot more technical work required now than it used to be.
Could a high school graduate just walk up and apply for a job and possibly get hired?
They very often do, even today.
Is the labor supply here, is it low? I mean, or do you have plenty of people willing to work?
I think it's adequate.
It's adequate, I would say, yeah.
Well, you mentioned the safety requirements now. Have you had any disasters in your Benham mine?
Down through the years, we've had an occasional fatality. We haven't had any that killed any great number of people.
I think a disaster is four or five people are killed. We never had that many.
So but you have lost some.
We had two at the time, a few times.
Yeah.
What about ups and downs in the coal industry, slump periods, boom periods, this type thing? How does that affect you?
Well, it affects you just like business anywhere. When the economy is low, the mines may have to cut down to work 3 days a week or 4 days a week, and it just affects neighbors like any other industry. When you don't need the product, you don't work and you don't get paid.
Well, what happened during the Great Depression? What happened to the miners? Were they severely...
I came over just toward the end of the Depression, but I've heard a lot of jokes made of it, you know. The company laid out little plots of ground around on the mountainsides for the people to put out gardens and stuff, and they credited them for necessities, and it was just one big joke. Everybody seemed to have a good time and enjoy it, but they got along, as I understand, quite well. I guess Clyde can take
it. Yes, they did. I remember the company would issue to each family $2 in a scrip. That was in the days of the scrip, and they could spend it in the company store. It's not a 16-ton thing, though. they would do that as well as furnishing plots of ground, and they carried that for some time after the mine began working good again. Then the company got their money back. But they did send in clothing. I've forgotten what to call that. John Knapp was in charge of that. So they had clothing they would give out to the families of the needy and come see them and place clothing out to them. They didn't have to pay for that, of course. But I know I had a garden up too far from where we're sitting here. And my father-in-law lived over not too far from that, but this was company property that we had to garden in. So at that time, there's some people, you know, here that didn't want to do the garden. They let you do it for them. I remember laying up there all night between my potato ridges, and I was watching the gardens with other people around too, till it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, well, nothing's going to happen now. So I went down to my father-in-law's house, my mother-in-law was up stirring, so she gave me a cup of coffee. And lo and behold, when I went back, they'd already dug up part of my potato.
You mean people would actually come in and steal your garden vegetables?
They sure would.
And just because they didn't want to raise their own garden, or didn't they have a plot?
Well, it could be they didn't have a plot.
Now, this one man that is a man at Hardmead, industrial relations man, Mr. Matt, Clyde Mifflin there, it was his job to distribute all this assistance to the different people. And, of course, there was always something wanting more than their share, you know. And he was pretty hard about turning them down, and his nickname was Hard Rock John. That followed him to the retired minister, Hard Rock John.
Well, now, Can you all think of anything else you'd like to tell about your life in Benham, about mining towns? Because, I mean, I'm not that familiar with mining, so it's hard for me just to know just what to ask you.
Well, personally, I'd like to say this about the town of Benham. Mr. Grant here he's the chairman of our church board. We have it is a Methodist church. That was by necessity. When the company gave the church building and all to the trustees, it became a Methodist church. But I live half of the year in Florida, but I'm always anxious and glad to get back to Benham, because as Bernardo said, it's like a big family now, the people in Benham. However, there are a lot of people there that are strangers to me anymore.
Yes.
If you move in, and they don't have to be employees.
Once the company left, that requirement was gone, that you had to be an employee?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes.
Did that requirement last right up until the 60s?
Yes.
What did people think when the company got ready to sell out? I mean, like you said, you'd rather not bought your own home, but it was easier to pay $13.
Yeah. Well, they just split down the middle. Half of them were glad they owned their own. They liked their own little property, and that I wish the company would keep it, you see.
Didn't you feel kind of independent now?
Oh, yeah, there is a certain amount of independence to own your own property. Now, the price has gone up to, I probably gained in the long run, you see. I don't know if you ever heard of script or not.
Now, he mentioned that they issued script.
Yeah, I thought that. They used to issue script. Some people can't make it from payday to payday. And if you run out of money needing some groceries, well, you go over to the office and draw a little pay in advance in the form of script. It could be a medal, whatever the company adopted. It could be a medal, a paper script. There was paper script, wasn't it?
Right.
And then, of course, that was just deducted from your pay at the end of the pay period, you see. But, of course, that script, you had to spend it at the company store. And naturally, the companies wouldn't have fooled, except that it's their advantage. Any advance pay you got in the form of script had to be spent at their store.
Well, there was no place else to spend it anyway, was there?
Well, nobody else would take it.
I was just under the impression that was what the company had was all that there was. I mean, their store.
Well, of course.
Now, maybe I've got it wrong.
Well, the store determined.
Oh, you mean you couldn't bring it? Oh, I see.
Yeah,
you had to spend it there in Benham.
Yeah. In the early days of Benham, that was the only store. You couldn't get down here to come unless you walked,
right?
But as time progressed, they built roads, and people came to come, and the stores built up here, and they had better shopping here, so they finally just did away with the store.
Okay, you mentioned roads. What were early problems, you know, with roads and things? I mean, the railroad came in, but what about paved roads? You know, transportation.
Well, there just weren't any. They'd take down this river. If you had to go down a few miles down the road, you just went down the riverbed. Mm-hmm. There weren't any roads.
Right.
That's right.
If you just went back in the forest somewhere and had to go somewhere, you'd just go down a stream of water. That's about the only way you could get there. So finally, when they started developing these mines up here, after the railroad came, then they started getting them out.
The first paved road to Harlem was 1930.
I think so.
And we had a paved road across the Black Mountain to Appalachia before we had one to
Harlan.
Well, now, you mentioned Black Mountain. Is that in Harlan County?
Yes.
Across the mountains is a state line. Half of them didn't have it.
And the highest point in Kentucky is right here near us.
Is it Black Mountain? I knew that, but I wasn't sure which county.
Yeah. I might mention it back there. These were two of the leading high schools in the state of Kentucky. We had kids go out here to West Point and Annapolis and went into professions at a higher rate than any school.
Now, what's the name of the school?
I mean, in the state. Well, Lynch and Benham.
Oh, just Lynch and Benham High School?
Yeah, we had an excellent school back then. Largely because the company supplemented the teachers' pay and they could attract better teachers, you see.
Well, now, can you name any particular distinguished citizens from Benham? I'm sure, as you said, there's a lot of people that made good.
The head doctor with the International Harvest Company has been a boy. What's his name?
Paul Eggum. Paul was down his high school reunion. You may want to erase this, but he says, well, I went from first left here as a honey dipper and came back ahead as head of the medical
medical department for the International Harvest Company.
What's a honey dipper?
Who told it this?
That's what he said. Well, that's true. He worked as a laborer. That's one kind of work had to be done.
That was one job.
Oh, we've had many people that were in the doctors and dentists and educators. I mean, our rate of that right. Type of people was as high as any for the state.
Oh, yeah, and he was a champion speller, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went from here to Washington back in his first relays.
What about your high school now? Is it still, I mean, like, I know the state rates high schools now. Would you have a, I think it's comprehensive high school. I think that's the highest rating.
I don't think we have the highest rating. Whatever the second highest is, possibly here in Cumberland.
Well, no, I don't know. You see, we had to give up your school and down this country. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep them out there.
But is there anything else that you all can think of that you'd like to tell about them, about mining life?
I just don't write off, I don't think anything.
As we've talked about Benham and mentioned Lynch occasionally, I get the impression that coal camp life wasn't so bad. I had always just assumed this was a tragedy, you know. You owe your soul to the company store and it's just this awful hard life. But from what you say, it doesn't seem so bad after all. Now, is this a typical situation?
I'd probably be prejudiced, but I might say that these are model situations. The situations all over the industry are not that good. That's true.
Are there other communities in Harlan County that would not be this good?
I think so, yes.
Does Harlan have a number of such mining camps or towns?
We have had many down through the years. A lot of them are going out of business and it's a ghost town now, of course. A few people still live there, but they're ghost towns.
Well, could you name some of them? Either of you?
I don't think so.
I could say this, Paul. One reason that Benham is not as hard, same thing. They, for this $100,000 a year that he spoke of, was used in the upkeep of the houses. The houses were kept in good state of repair and painted regularly. So you could drive through the town, you saw all the houses looking real good, the yards looking good.
Well, maybe you'd rather not name these, but could you name any of the other companies that were in the area other than U.S. Steel and International Harvester, or would you just rather not talk about that?
They were the two major ones.
Peabody Coal Company and Blue Diamond Coal Company are two others in the county. But they're pretty sizable companies.
But then Benham and Lynch are what you'd call model communities of this type of situation for a mining town.
Yeah.
Well, now, what about other things? Let's go back to entertainment. You mentioned that they provided, I think, a dance floor and different things. Can you think of anything else that you did for entertainment? Did you play baseball or anything
like
that?
They had the companies assisted in securing baseball players, giving summer employment, you know, and had some real good baseball teams. They had celebrations for every occasion, 4th of July, which the company spent money to provide, and all just numerous things.
Well, I might add, everybody was fascinated with the first fireworks that came up in here, you know. They used to have it at Benham,
right?
When was the first fireworks?
I don't know when was the first, but every 4th of July.
Yeah.
Pardon?
At least 50 years ago.
Yes, I'd say at least 50 years ago.
Did the company ever bring in any big name entertainment for the big name at the time? Did you ever see anybody famous in here?
Not that I can recall.
Let me add something right there. We had Billy Sunday up at Lynch one time at the baseball field.
Mm-hmm. That's the minister, right?
Yeah.
The evangelist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read somewhere that Franklin Roosevelt was in Harlan County back during the administration of Teddy Roosevelt. Do you all remember hearing about this? I don't even know which part of the county it was supposed to be in. It may have been down in the town of Harlan.
I don't know about that myself.
I read about it.
Nobody was here to remember that. But did they provide any other entertainment in the company? Any, well, what about the country club, golf courses type thing?
Yes, they furnished property for a golf course. Golf course was built in about 1935. They furnished 87 acres, I believe, for their employees, and well, for the three towns, actually, Benham, Montgomery, and Lynch.
And later, Lynch provided a golf course of their own up there, too. It's not quite as large as Sleepy Hollow, but it is a golf course now. It's used a lot.
Well, how would you gentlemen compare the town of Cumberland with these mining towns? Now, it's my understanding that Cumberland was not a mining town.
Right.
Is that right? Okay, well, how would you compare it, I mean, with these mining towns right here next door?
I would say this, that of course Cumberland lives off of the mining areas around, because the workmen bring their, when payday comes, they come to Cumberland to spend their money. And it has been a great asset to the area. Some of the other people talk about Cumberland and Chamber of Commerce here, but they're a very progressive city and have been notified as such. I don't know what awards they have had, but they have been a good thing for them.
Well, why was Cumberland established, or do you know this?
That's the reason.
To provide services for
Cumberland? Yes.
Well, now, does Cumberland have any industry other than the people coming in from the coal mines?
No.
Well,
and what little farming goes on around.
So you just do still have some farmers in
them? Oh, one point. The most corn per acre for any place in Kentucky was in Harlan County. I don't know where all that speak, but I don't know how hard to spot it was, but most corn per acre was.
You got a good farmer around too.
I'm in Harlan County.
One of you mentioned something before we turned the recorder on, something about a captive mine. Now, what was that?
A company that mines and uses its own product. It's not on the market for sale.
They have steel mills.
They use it in their own steel mills. It's known as a captive mine. That means they just use their own coal.
Back earlier, we made the remark that the best metallurgical coal found in the country was here in this area. That's why International Harvester came in and developed the property in order to get that excellent coal. So it'd be a waste of it to use it for steam and so forth at that time.
And
it's better used as metallurgical coal.
They kept it for themselves.
Right.
They didn't but sell it, is it?
Right, and both these companies owned their own railroad cars for a number of years. They don't anymore, but for a number of years they owned their own railroad cars. It shipped the coal to Pittsburgh or Chicago, whichever.
Well, now, what's Benham's position today in relation to International Harvester? International Harvester still owns the mine? Is that International Harvester not on the mine anymore?
Within the last 2 years, International Harvester has sold out their whole steel division. Their oil mines, their coal mines, their steel mills. They sold the whole thing. They still manufacture, trucks and farm equipment and construction equipment, but they've gotten out of the steel business within the last 2 years.
Well, who owns the mine now?
A company by the name of Envirodyne, and I don't know too much about the company.
They're a California company, holding company.
Okay. Well, now, what is the town's relation to this new company? I mean, do you have, should we say, important officials of the company visiting here? Are they not interested in the town itself? They're just interested in the mine,
right.
Is that right?
That's right. They have no interest at all in the town.
So now you're just an independent
right.
operation?
Right. From the town is.
Now, this may be a subject you just totally don't want to talk about, and it's the unions. Would you rather just not say anything about unions, or Would you answer if I ask a few little things?
We'll see.
Okay, well, I just wondered, like, how did unions change things? I mean, how did they affect your lives once the unions came in?
Well, of course, a number of years ago, there weren't any unions here, and they started moving in, you know, and the companies, of course, all tried to keep them out. And it's been a roaring situation down through the years until finally the, especially the United Mine Workers, are well established now. And it's common knowledge how the union has improved working conditions and wages and everything for the employees, you know. And all in all, I think it's been good. It's been good for the industry and been good for the individual miners.
But it was a violent struggle?
There was much violence involved down through the years. It's common knowledge. There were battles, there were lives lost, and it was pretty rough.
Are there any particular incidences that either one of you would want to tell about or recall?
The Benham employees, for some reason or other, chose not to join the United Mine Workers, and pressure was put on them to join, so it looked like they had to join a union of some sort, so they affiliated with another union up from Illinois, Progressive Miners. And there were some battles at Benham on three or four different occasions, back in the late 30s and up until 1946. We had several gun battles up there. The pickets, you know, would come in, and the people there at Benham just plain rejected the idea, and they had gun battles.
Now, is this the rejected unions, period, or are you saying that it was a struggle between the two different unions?
Well, I guess you'd say that.
Jurisdictional.
Yeah.
It was between the two different unions.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now, is there anything else, mining life, Benham, anything that you'd like to tell about before we close? At least we know the railroad's going through.
What? It reminds me, the family from Benham and Lynch used to be rather large. Somebody thought perhaps larger than average across the country, so somebody gave a reason for it, and they said, about 4:35 o'clock, and the train came in. Woke everybody up, and it's too early.
At least we know the secret of pest control now. That was close to it.
You know, that reputation, commonly had a reputation of drinking considerably, you know. And we had one old fella in Benham who drank pretty bad, and he came in home one night, he was sick. He got so sick he thought he was going to die. And he asked his wife to pray for him. And she got down and asked the Lord to have mercy on the poor little drunk husband. And he raised up and said, don't tell him I'm drunk, tell him I'm sick.
Yeah. Well, the miners, what you'd say, rough characters?
As a
just like everything else, you have some good and some bad in it.
Yeah.
Well, unless you gentlemen have something else that you'd like to add, I'm going to cut it off. Anything you can think of? Okay, thank you.